Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, he was home alone at his grandparents' farmhouse when someone knocked on the front door late at night. Looking through the window, he immediately recognized the man standing on the porch. The problem was, the man was nearly 2 hours away.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And yes, call, share your ghost stories with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number to do just that. And of course, you can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And press subscribe wherever you're listening or downloading us, wherever it may be. Hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our gazillion of episodes that exist of this program. I have no idea how many episodes we have.
So you have to hire somebody just to figure that out.
I don't know how to do it because we do reruns and stuff too,
right?
So to know the exact trying to think of a way I could check. There might be a way through one of our I don't know. Anyway, it's a lot. It's thousands. It's more than one could consume unless you're like stalkerish murder type material, I think. I don't know anyone would want to consume that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you could get through that much, but there's a gazillion. If you want ghost stories, this is a place to get it. So do press subscribe. I'm Tony. That's Todd. And hi, how are you this fine day?
Good. We were talking a little bit off the air about the end of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of the end of The Late Show with David Letterman. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that I weeped like a child that night. I didn't stop the next day.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out exactly why the hell I was feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was because he was just such a big part of my life. Like, yeah. Okay, the show goes away. I get it. Whatever. Things happen. But I was just so devastated by it. And then you realize you're getting older and all these years have passed, even though I remember some of the bits he did really early on with Late Night.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, some of them, what I would do like during the school year is I'd record each show.
Yeah.
Friday night, there wasn't a show back in the day. It was Monday through Thursday. So Friday night I would stay up and I'd watch 4 hours of Letterman, and then I'd watch it again on Saturday. And maybe on Sunday, if I had time, I might watch them again. So some of the stuff I can watch some of the bits from back then and know them word for word.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Why? And then so for me it's like, is there any other show that ever meant this much to me, kind of thing? And I don't think there was, but I freaking bawling like a baby. I'm driving to work the next morning and I'm just
yeah. The I used the words Rupert G and Hello Deli in a monologue yesterday. I don't remember what it was about, but somehow I worked it in.
How the hell did you do that?
I don't know, but it's in something. It's in something I read on Hidden Killers. It was, but no, I mean, I felt the same way. I mean, it was heartbreaking when that ended, and I don't know why we were so connected to that. We were never, part of that show or anything, but I don't know. I mean, it was.
But he created a lot of who we became.
He did.
His delivery, the type of goofy stuff he did.
He made it okay to do.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. I think it was an inspiration to us at a very young age, and it spoke to us. And it was really sad to see that, that come to an end. But I remember watching the next day after they ended the show, and CBS like literally went in there and started throwing everything in a fucking dumpster.
I know.
Like, I have part of the fucking bridge right over there from the background of Letterman.
How long is it? Is it the blue one that you've got?
No, yeah, it's just a piece of the rail. You want to see it? Let's do some show and tell.
Yeah, if you've got time, I'd love to see it. So apparently now he's going to show us the bridge from The Late Show with David Letterman. Now, this is the second set. because if anybody doesn't know, there were two sets during his run. And I believe this is, yeah, this is from the second set. Let's see what he's got here. Can't hear you because I think you muted. You might have.
Oh, there we go. Yep. Oh, here we go. So this will be on the YouTube as well, which we need to get up running. Working. I've been slowly like backloading things, but I'm just gonna have to say, let's just load it and just fucking go. We should just start loading now and go. But I'll get all that to you, and then we'll backload. But so I got a couple things here. Before we get to the bridge.
Yeah.
So in honor of CBS News ending, this is kind of, it's nothing to do with the real CBS, but my first microphone I ever got when I was 2 years old.
Oh.
Is right here.
Let me pull that up.
It says CBS Sports on it.
Oh my God.
This yes. was a little, and it was, it like went to your AM radio, I believe. Right. And you press, there's a button here, and it's like a battery that goes. There was like a big poofy yellow head to this. But I got a picture of me getting this on my, when I lived on Winnebago Drive when I was two, getting this microphone. And I used to play with this thing talking into the radio. And the biggest thing was trying to get the radio tuned to whatever,
right,
whatever it was on. But so that sits right over there. Kind of in my radio area. I also have this other fun piece that's just by simply because really of the size. And this is a mail order fruit by the foot pencil that you got. And it says Tony Bruschi Kid News on it. Because I was pretending I was working in news at the time. And who doesn't use a foot long pencil?
That's a huge freaking pencil. That would last you a long time.
This is like mail order circa like 1993-ish. So I got that. But then here's the fun one. Here is part of the bridge.
Yes. From
David Letterman right here. This is the, it would have been in the background, you know.
Right behind him, right?
Yep.
On the blue, arch kind of thing?
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep. If you look at, I mean, this would have been the Letterman years, the later Letterman years. So the last, 2000-ish, late 90s, up to whenever he ended, I think the bridge existed.
Yeah.
There's, it's interesting, the amount of people, when I watch, most interviews I watch of Letterman, the bridge is in existence in the background, which I'm always kind of like, that's kind of cool. I'll get a little piece of that right there. That was, and it's just, you know, like, I think like a craft store, like Christmas bridge or something that they spray painted light blue. And then it was literally glue gunned onto the bridge. Like there's glue gun tape. Like there's nothing special about this shit. It's how you make sets.
I think it's interesting because I always thought his set looked really, really good considering it wasn't like AI. It wasn't a big screen or anything like that. They literally, somebody, made that stuff up, like you said, crafting.
Yeah.
And it just looked really, really cool. So the fact that you've got a little piece is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's the magic of TV, I guess, where you think, oh, it's all like, no, they went to the craft store and built this shit, you know, and then they had art people that cut stuff out of cardboard and built it. And it sat there and collected dust for decades and worked, you know, on camera, works lovely. But I mean, that's the funny thing is, so much of this. I mean, it's funny when this room looks like chaos that I'm in. It looks very organized right here, but these are just simply two screens, two separate screens.
Right.
But it's lights, it's shit, it's cords, it's everything. And I think that's one of the bigger things that I've had to get used to since doing video and not just radio. I mean, I already had my cherry popped on radio many years ago, like of what, you know, behind the scenes, what's going on. But, you know, TV was kind of something I dabbled here and there little bits, but as I've done more and more of it, it's like, oh, that's just as big of a fucking facade as anything else too. Cause it's just, everything is so, it's set up this way. And that, but you worked in TV, you did camera work and all that for a while, way before I knew you, but
and, well, yeah, I was it. Yeah. I think it was about that time.
It was right before that's I right. met you, I think. Yeah.
And the most interesting thing that I will tell you is that, I worked at Channel 5 in Green Bay, and the new set, literally the backdrop was kind of this sponge painted crap. And I looked one time, I just went up to it and looked at it, and it was literally paper bags. Like you could see on the side, it said IGA if you ripped it back just a little bit, and they kind of decoupaged it up there.
Yeah.
And then they like they sponge painted over the top. So literally it was paper bags for the drop, the backdrop.
Yeah. Not the shit you think about when you're looking at it. You're like, gosh, this is a nice, and it's like, oh, that's literally just like a crafting project that looks good on an SD camera.
Yeah. And we didn't have SD cameras back then. So
I mean, you had SD. It was only SD back then. I'm talking HD.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And like we had old cameras from like CBS, like seriously. I don't even know how they fricking got those things to work. They were so old, but yeah. And then, you know, people would like move their chairs wrong and they chip off some of the countertop or something. And then somebody come in with a marker and color it in, you know, cause the camera's not going to catch that. So you do whatever you had to do. Yeah. It's all smoke and mirrors. Even today with the graphics and stuff, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. It's all lies. Everything's a lie.
Yeah, it is.
Everybody, it's all a fucking lie. Yeah, I mean, it is funny. Like every studio, it's funny. And sometimes the bigger the station I went into, the shittier the studio.
Especially radio.
Yes, especially radio. Yes, yes. Where it's like, oh, wow, yeah, this is, you know.
All that great stuff comes out of this room, huh? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that it's kind of amazing, but that's behind the curtain. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. If you'd like to share your real ghost stories with us, we would love to hear them. We have a letter we're going to start out with, and I have to tell you, there's a musical selection as well that has been put together by our friends at the Artificial Intelligence Center of Paducah. they have come up with something lovely for us. And it's a riff on the story. It's not identical, but it's inspired by, if you will. Let's jump into the actual story here. And it starts out, "Dear Dr. Laura, by the time Caleb was old enough to understand the stories, nobody in the family told them directly anymore. They surfaced in fragments during holidays or late night conversations on the porch after too many beers. An uncle would casually mention hearing somebody knock at the front door long before a car ever pulled into the driveway. A cousin swore she once saw her brother standing near the barn while he was still an hour away. His grandmother repeated the same rule so often that eventually nobody questioned it anymore. Never open the door at night unless you know exactly what's outside. The farmhouse sat deep in rural Georgia, surrounded by woods and old fields that seemed to stretch forever after sunset. Visitors were impossible to miss out there. A long gravel drive cut through the trees towards the house, and headlights usually bounced through the woods for several minutes before anyone arrived. If somebody was coming, you knew they were coming. That was why the knocking bothered Caleb so much years later, because there had been no headlights. The property had belonged to the family for generations. By the late 80s, the place was already beginning to decay around the edges. The barn leaned slightly to one side. Sections of fencing disappeared into weeds, and parts of the porch sagged beneath years of storms and humidity. Still, nobody in the family would or could ever bring themselves to leave it behind completely. Caleb loved the place as a kid, at least during the daytime. At night, everything changed. The woods absorbed sound strangely, and once darkness settled in, the entire property seemed to grow unnaturally still. Even the adults behaved differently after sunset. Doors stay locked, curtains stayed shut. His grandfather always checked the yard one final time before bed, usually standing silently on the porch for several seconds before coming back inside. As a child, Caleb used to lie awake in the upstairs bedroom listening to the sounds outside the house. Wind moving through the trees, dogs barking somewhere near the fence line, occasionally footsteps crossing the old porch while everyone inside remained asleep. Back then, he assumed that was simply how old farmhouses sound at night. Then his mother started dating David. David was stationed at Fort Benning, a military base nearly 2 hours away, and Caleb had only met him a handful of times before the night it happened. He remembered disliking the man almost immediately, though he never fully understood why. David tried too hard around the family, especially with his grandfather, who never seemed entirely comfortable around him either. A few nights after one of David's visits, Caleb sat alone in the living room watching television while his mother showered upstairs. That was when the knocking started. Three slow knocks against the front door. Not loud. Deliberate. At first, Caleb assumed David had driven out to surprise his mother. He got up from the couch and pulled back the curtain beside the front window, expecting to see headlights somewhere down the driveway. Instead, David was already standing on the porch beneath the weak yellow light near the door. Even decades later, Caleb still remembered how wrong he looked. David normally carried himself with loud confidence, but the man standing outside looked drained somehow, pale, almost gray beneath the porch light. His shoulders sagged slightly, and he stood completely still, staring towards the house without blinking. What unsettled Caleb most was the expression on his face. Not angry, not sad, just empty. For several long seconds, Caleb stood frozen at the window, trying to understand why seeing someone familiar suddenly felt terrifying. Then the dog started barking. His grandparents kept several dogs on the property, and they were used to visitors. Normally, they barked briefly before running excitedly towards the driveway whenever someone arrived. This sounded different. The dog circled somewhere near the porch, snarling and barking hard enough that Caleb finally backed away from the window and ran upstairs for his mother. When he told her David was outside, she immediately looked confused. "He's at Fort Benning," she said. Caleb insisted he had just seen him standing on the porch. His mother followed him downstairs quickly, probably assuming Caleb misunderstood something or saw another man near the house. But the moment she opened the front door, the porch sat empty. The dog still barked somewhere near the tree line, though now they sounded further away. No headlights, no car, nothing. His grandfather came in from the kitchen looking irritated after the barking woke him up. Once Caleb explained what happened, his grandfather walked directly to the wall phone and called David's apartment himself. David answered. Still at the base, nearly 2 hours away. After that, the adults did what the adults usually do when a child experiences something they cannot explain. They rationalized it. His mother told him he probably thought he saw David because he expected him to visit eventually. His grandfather suggested maybe someone had been standing near the porch, and Caleb filled in the rest himself after getting startled by dogs. Even his grandmother gently reassured him that porch lights and shadows could play tricks on people late at night. Nobody act frightened. Nobody treated it like a ghost story. Eventually, the conversation faded away completely, but Caleb never forgot what he saw because it had looked exactly like David. Not similar, not close, exactly like him. And yet Caleb knew with complete certainty that whatever stood on that porch that night had not been a real person. Years passed. His mother eventually married David, despite his grandparents quietly disliking him from the beginning. His grandfather never openly argued with her about the relationship, but Caleb noticed the older man became distant whenever David visited the farmhouse. Conversation shortened. The atmosphere inside the house tightened. Sometimes his grandfather would simply leave the room altogether rather than sit with him or for very long. At the time, Caleb assumed they just disliked each other. Looking back now, he wasn't so sure because over the years, the marriage slowly became exactly what everyone feared. David turned controlling, angry, and eventually violent enough that Caleb's mother finally left him years later. Looking back now, Caleb sometimes wondered whether the thing on the porch had been warning them, not about death, not about ghosts, about David himself. Because the man his mother eventually married was not the same version Caleb met during those first few visits to the farm. Over time, the charm slowly disappeared and something colder took its place. Arguments became shouting matches. Shouting eventually became holes punched through walls and long nights where Caleb lay awake listening to his mother crying quietly behind a locked bedroom door. And every once in a while, Caleb would suddenly remember the figure standing silently beneath the porch light all those years later, pale, still, watching the house with that same empty expression, as if the property had recognized something long before the family did. By then, Caleb was older and no longer living at the farmhouse, but every once in a while, he still thought about the figure standing silently on the porch that night. Years later, after both grandparents passed away, the farmhouse sat abandoned and slowly disappeared into the woods. Caleb avoided going back for nearly a decade. Then one fall evening in his 40s, he finally drove out there alone. At first, the place felt smaller than he remembered, sadder too. Parts of the porch had collapsed inward, vines swallowed sections of fencing, and most of the old barn roof had caved in completely. He spent nearly an hour walking around the property, filming pieces of it on an old camcorder, mostly wanting to preserve what remained before the county eventually tore the place down. Nothing unusual happened, no voices. No shadow figures, no strange sounds from the woods. Eventually, Caleb started feeling embarrassed for how nervous he had been driving out there in the first place. Then, just before sunset, he found himself standing near the front porch, looking back towards the gravel drive cutting through the trees. And for the first time in years, he finally understood why the experience had stayed with him all this time. It wasn't because he thought he saw a ghost. It was because whatever stood on that porch had known something about David long before the rest of his family did. Even now, Caleb still cannot explain what he saw that night. He only knows one thing with certainty. For a few seconds in the late 80s, something wearing David's face stood outside his grandparents' farmhouse, watching the house in complete silence. And whatever it was, it did not feel human. Ta-da.
Yikes. Have you ever experienced that before where you think you've seen somebody, coworker, I don't know, family member, whatever, and then you realize they weren't there ever at all? I don't think I've ever heard, I've never seen anybody, but obviously you and I have had experiences where somebody's come in the building and
I've had that.
Yeah.
But never seen, never like looked over and was like, oh, there you are, you know, and then you're not, you know, right. I've never, you know, it kind of goes into like, you know, I'm almost like doppelgangerish territory a little bit, but I don't know if that is it or it's something else.
Does a doppelganger, though, do they actually take on your persona? So, in other words, act the way you would act, talk the way you would talk, your verbiage, your
demeanor? I don't think so, because a lot of times you hear about doppelgangers, and it's like it looks like the person, but it's not necessarily the person. You know, it like the... the persona is completely off, and maybe that's probably because it's not a doppelganger. It's just somebody that actually looks like the person. Yeah. But I've heard that where it's just almost like distant, distracted, or not, you know, just not really connected to anything. So I don't know.
I don't think that's freaky. I don't like it.
I have an interesting take on the story. And this I based off of strictly the description that I have on it. And it's a concept on the story of maybe, just maybe, Mom was entertaining ghostly night callers, to put it nicely, at the house. And then he had, you know, as a child, David's, David's the child of the story, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Caleb.
Okay, yeah. Caleb. And then he's trying to square all this up, while realizing that mom has a very profitable business going, entertaining ghostly men.
Yeah.
At night. So here's the take on the song. This is from the Ghost Story Singers. Here we go. Got that sax going. Seven-day forecast is coming up right after the Tribon Challenge. Y96 FM.
The house was too quiet. Heard soft moans drifting like smoke in the night. Pushed open her door and my heart hit the floor. Mama lost in the moment with no one in sight. Translucent hands moving over her skin. A glowing blue figure pulling her in. Cold breath on her neck, eyes closed in pure bliss. She's giving dead men the touch that they missed. Ectoplasm blowing soft on the sheets like regret.
Ectoplasm.
My whole world reset. My mom's a hooker. Ghost in the night. She services spirits. And the living won't buy. I'm trying to breathe, but the cold won't let go. Every creak in the dark.
Secret. Dave Cause Radio Show. Happy Sunday morning.
My mom is a hooker, and she services spirits.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me, remember the one we did several weeks ago? Where the guy and his, I don't know, his partner come home or something, and
yeah,
dad's a ghost. That
was quite there's so many ghost songs. Yeah, they're kind of, it seems to be a theme of parents having relations with the dead and the children trying to figure it out later.
I only remember one story about a woman, and it's maybe the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
She said she was marrying a ghost. Do you remember that story when you were she was kind of nuts and stuff, but she was dating a ghost and all that stuff.
Yeah,
she,
I do kind of remember that.
She got married to it.
Yeah.
And then got a divorce.
Divorce the ghost.
Yeah. So maybe it's a real thing. We, you know, we're making fun of it, but
it's going to be one of those things we're going to hear about. And all these people have been experiencing this for years and they just hadn't been able to talk about it. It'll be this trauma of their parents having affairs with ghosts.
There's your Dr. Laura call right there.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. So tell me about this ghost. It's a whore, honey. It's a whore. If your dad wants to go have sex with a whore ghost, go have sex with a whore ghost.
Is she the anti-Delilah? Would you call her that?
Dr. Laura?
Yeah. To a certain extent.
Wouldn't that be a great combination of a show? Oh my have God. Dr. Laura fill in for Delilah. Ugh. Dr. Laura's still alive, isn't she?
I think so.
I think she's still like, yeah, like her corpse is kicking somewhere and still living. That'd be a fascinating show, though. The two of them co-hosting. That'd be great.
Okay.
It's a train wreck. It'd be a train wreck waiting to happen. Like a caller calls in, Delilah's relating to it. Dr. Laura's ripping them all apart.
I put my money on Delilah.
I would too. I think Delilah would be the most likely to solve the problem and then end it with a lovely Michael McDonald selection. I don't think Dr. Laura is going to be given any Michael McDonald selections. It's just not the same type of show. But I think that would be interesting. That would be good. All right, there you go. There's your musical selection of the day. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you can jam out to that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. If you'd like to share your real ghost stories with us, you can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And we'd love to hear your ghost stories. Get access to the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, all the extra stuff, Apple Podcasts and Patreon. Just search Real Ghost Stories Online. You will find us in both places. We do appreciate that. Press subscribe for Todd. I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.